Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to the Stay Up podcast. My name is Jim Dacian. I'm author of the book Stay Up Los Angeles Street Art, and I'm excited to have Gregory Siff on the phone with me today. How are you, Gregory?
I'm awake. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. I know you've been incredibly busy. Yesterday, you were installing your recent show at Gallery Brown. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening there?
Well, I've been like plugged into my studio trying to complete everything in time for a matter of time. And the irony is that I'm making this whole show all about these different moments of time and trying to say time doesn't exist. And here I'm in crunch time right now. And as I'm speaking to you, I'm finishing a few pieces that'll go to the gallery today. And I'm just trying to squeeze the rest of the paint out of my own tube to just get it all out there and just do the start creating things in the time that when there's no time left, the stuff that you're creating might just be what you were looking for. And I think that's what artists love is to push themselves and try new things and see what they come out with. And that's where I'm at right now. I was up last night trying to get these last pieces, and it's a really exciting moment. In fact, the install was pushed till today, which gave me an extra day of time to go, okay, what other pieces can I create and what else can I say about myself in these pieces that I want everyone to see? So that's always good when you get a little extra.
Yeah, you get a little extra time to push it in there. That's interesting. So you're this kind of guy that it just seems like you create right up to the second. So last second. So when you install, will you be part of the curatorial decisions, or
Definitely.
Is the gallery handling that?
It's a really great thing because it's first of all deciding to take all this work that's been inside your place for 2 months that you've been talking to by yourself, and then just saying, okay, let's put other eyes on it and see where they are. And I like that kind of dialogue between the experience of someone seeing what I've done before and then bringing in the next thing and going, whoa, where did you go? So it'll be like kind of a symbiotic relationship between Dina at Gallery Brown and one of the curators at the Art Reserve, his name's Eli Consilvio, and myself, and all three of us will basically look what I've just dumped out of my head and kind of piece together this puzzle and how we want to tell it. And it's really cool because I've been making my own art shows and making things happen for myself where I was like, hey, I go to the Standard Hotel and say, hey, this is my artwork. I'd like to do a show. And that would last, you know, for one evening or for in a group show. But this is my first like show that will be in a space for 30 days and a solo show in a gallery that in a respected gallery that I admire all the people that are hanging on our walls with, you know, she Dina has a great collection and taste of artists from Warhol to Shepard Fairey, Jean-Michel Basquiat, heroes of mine, and it's really cool to be hanging in on the same walls. And now on Saturday night, it'll just be all of my most recent work. I'm kind of excited.
You should be excited. That's pretty awesome. Congratulations. It's a fantastic feat, and hopefully more to come. And what you're describing, this process of installing and reflecting and bringing other people into it, I feel is another level in terms of how folks view your art, because it's one thing for the artist to have this exchange and to always be reflecting on your own work. And then when you bring other professionals into it, you get more of the conscious of what the public and what the critic and what the collector is, how they're going to engage your work and the relationships in the gallery. And those are things that need to be paid attention to, and they usually require some sort of group think in order or critique to happen at some point.
Yeah, definitely, Jim. And putting a piece in the street and having, you know, you get to put something out there or do a piece on your own and then, you know, you leave it there and you let it last as long as it'll last, or you let it be, and maybe you hear someone take a picture of it and say something about the piece. But this is going to be like a collection of, like, it's so funny, at my art shows, most of the people that are there are people I hang out with, are my friends, and I like that I have friends that can tell me, you know, the truth about how they feel about each piece. And I have a lot of different styles that are developing. I never really thought I would be working with sculpture so much, and this show has a lot of different places where I've pushed myself into that. I'm saying, I've never really tried this, but let's give it a shot, because that's what I feel like. That's what I feel like I'm going to actually get somewhere. Is if I just keep doing the same thing, I'm going to just be the guy who did this, or the guy with the blue, red, and yellow, or the guy, and everything has meaning. And like you see in a movie, when there's a movie on the screen, you know, they film that everything in that frame has a specific meaning of why it's been there, why it was shot this way, why it was lit. Everything. It's the same thing that goes with a painting. Even though maybe you'd look at a Jackson Pollock and see that it was splattered and whatever your taste is about art, everything is in that painting for a reason. There is no accident, like Pollock says, and Basquiat also has to say that, you know, every line is there because I wanted it to be that way. It's not because, you know, there are accidents, and then you work with those accidents, and then you have more accidents, and you work with them, and without you putting that, and without engaging with it, without having a conversation with your work, it's just going to be the same thing every time. And I don't ever want to be that. I hope my stuff always kind of retains a thorough line, but
what you're talking about, this the intentionality of the artist, the amount of thought, and the multidimensional ways that artwork speak, most folks will miss that. We just don't have an aesthetically tuned public. But those who are can read that, and they can read it's incredible language, and that's why art is so fun to look at and to talk about and reflect upon. You mentioned
that.
A bunch of things in that statement that I kind of want to dig
yeah, no,
on
and
a
I
little
like
bit.
To say art, I just want to say before we forget, like, art is fun to look at, and that's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Is like, I was stressing out a few, and I was like, what the? Going out of my mind right here. I'm not going to be able to make this as good. I'm going to have to delete these pieces and put this there, and I got to send out this. And then my girlfriend says to me, she goes, remember why you did this? Because you wanted to have fun. Like, you wanted an art show, didn't you? And now you're like, and it was just like, it brought me right back down to reality and be like, I'm painting paintings and getting paid for that and doing what I love. Calm down. It's just, you know, like, remember that it's fun, and remember the art doesn't always have to. I mean, there are pieces in the show that hurt, you know, but there are also pieces in there that you'll walk in and laugh at, and I love that. And I like that you said that.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent perspective to bring up, because it is, we're lucky to be able to be in this field and to do what you love, and yeah, and that usually comes across in your work too.
You only
really
have right
it.
Now. It's like, if you're not getting happy now, then all right.
Yeah.
When?
I completely agree with you.
You don't have that much time, and that's like, even in making these pieces, and I'll talk about it. I wanted to try this one painting, which was going to be birth, life, and death. Ultimately, after painting it, it's been life and death, and just all these different connections and revelations. The more hours you spend in front of a canvas, the more time you're painting, and the more that you have to think about yourself, and that's what's a really good thing, is like, painting is like a meditation. You start to uncover things, and I really like that. Each time I say yes to doing a show, I uncover a whole new thing of like, about art. And there's two of them, but I would let you speak. You got me all fired up
no.
here, and it's only 9:10 in the morning.
Well, no, I like to say that art in general is thinking made visual. And it's the best way to think, and it's a deep statement, but it speaks to how powerful a visual object is. We have all sorts of trite ways to get around that. Painting's worth 1,000 words and things of that sort, but they don't capture it. I mean, thinking made visual is exactly what you're talking about. It's a lifetime of experiences, things that you've read and studied, and relationships and interactions. put into visual form.
I like sometimes I think to myself when I was painting, I was like, a good painting is like when if an artist exhales all this breath out and you could actually see what's going on in there, and it's just like in one note, like you can, you know, you say the word fire and you, all these things come to your head, you know, hot and all color red and all these different things. Or when, like a good painting is like a good word or an eloquent speech that you just get on the one note, and like that's one, like a great painting, you walk in like bam, oh, and you just go to that one, and there's a whole bunch of them. That's why I feel like that's like when you and it sometimes takes sometimes you don't understand other languages. It's like not understanding a different painting, but when you learn the language, you're like, oh, that you can get it. And you know, my stuff isn't I like to make stuff that's cool for me. Like at the end of the day, I'm like, I would hang that on my wall and come home and feel good about it, and it would make me just like, you know, it just is. So
what kind of reactions have you gotten from your work from folks that you've been around to see, whether it be in the street or in the gallery? Any memorable experiences with folks?
I want to say that it's cool to be in Los Angeles and be so in touch with, you know, in the art world that's over here in L.A., and, you know, in Venice and downtown and Hollywood. There's some real loyal art lovers and art creators, and it's like when there's a show, everyone gets to kind of get together and how are you and what are you working on? And then and there's a lot of support in L.A. and in terms of, you know, I'm from New York and I've been, you know, going back and forth, but it seems like I've yet to do a show there where I can say, hey, I'm an artist. And here I feel like I'm excited to see what that's like when I go back to New York, and I will do a show there in 2013. But this stuff that's going on in L.A. is a lot of support, and I have, you know, you can get emails. There are so many different magazines and online blogs, and so many people that are into it, and I've been able to meet a lot of people who've written about my stuff, and I'm trying to think of a particular experience where someone came over to me like, wow, you just sang the song the way I wanted to hear it. You know, like you know that song? But I don't have one of those. Maybe I'll get one on Saturday.
I'm sure you will. I think what support groups, the first thing you mentioned, support groups are incredibly important for any artist, but also we've seen it a lot with some of the lowbrow culture, street art, graffiti, the professional art world. I mean, it is just sort of a staple that you have to have, or you're just not going to last. And it sounds like you have that. I mean, there's enthusiasm that comes from that, but also you get critical dialogue. And then you just get folks to, hey, that's great that you're doing what you're doing. It sort of keeps you motivated in that way. But the interactions with people, it just, so much is online now, it sometimes it's removed from the artist. Like I can look up your work online now and have quite a bit of experiences. And I mean, you did a mural some time ago with the faces. And I could say something about that and talk about it, but again, you would never know. And so that's why I'm always curious, because sometimes it's removed from the artist, and it's nice to get that. So I would imagine you will get that this weekend. I don't think that is too far off.
You know, like, I like that you bring up the online aspect of it, because these paintings that people make that you see on a computer, and when you go to see it in person, it's just like looking at a painting that you go into a museum and have that kind of, you know, when you go to an opening, there's a ton of people, there's a lot of noise, paintings are on the wall, everything's, you're talking and da-da-da-da-da-da. But when you have that like kind of one-on-one moment with the painting and with yourself, you know, there's different, you know, there's different ways of viewing that piece. I was just going to say something about
Well, let me pick up there, because
about seeing something online, and like when that mural that you recall, which was probably from about it might have been before sometime in February when I did that realm with all the different faces. I seen the maturity of them now. When I look at that photo, I'm like, wow, I don't even write my R's that way anymore, or I don't even write my, you know, the faces like that. I came out to Los Angeles doing acting in the beginning, and I had an acting coach named Cameron Thor. And, you know, he always said, like, when you give your reel, which is like your work that you are, I was on this show and that show and this show, and you give that to someone to say your reel, you could say, this was me 7 months ago. This isn't me right now. It's a constant clock and a constant, with every painting you do, you learn something new about how you're going to paint. And it's like with every day you live, you get more experiences, and that way you know how, you know, to dodge certain things and how to, you know, and how to win on certain things and learn from the losses and stuff like that. So it's always weird sometimes when you type in your name in a Google search and see different work that's from before, because I'm sure, you know, a lot of artists get, you know, sometimes it's very hard to even share one piece that's been in your house that you're afraid to set it out into the world. And Rothko was like, it's like putting your babies out there, and, you know, it's like sending your children off, you know, without, you know, giving them everything they need. It's like sending them off to war. That's pretty harsh, but.
Yeah, well, because you're not there to contextualize it. You're not there to educate or facilitate a looking. It's just there. It's got to speak for itself. So
right.
I understand
and
what
I
you're
like
saying. But also the – oh, go ahead.
No, I like when a good painting could do that, and you just don't even need – you don't need the explanation. And that's a good piece when –
yeah, without a doubt. I mean, yeah, you're not going to be able to follow the work around forever saying this is about X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And you don't want a placard to do that for you either. You want the actual visual image to do that. You brought up before that, you know, the thing I was going to follow up with you on is the importance of actually seeing the three-dimensional work rather than online, because it is, you lose something. Whether it's in an art history class or you're looking at something online, there's something much more physical about looking at something in person, and that's an experience that is certainly worth it. That's why we want folks to go to openings and go to museums to see those things. But your enthusiasm is really fantastic. It's pretty contagious. And so you brought up a few things about your background. You mentioned that you were an actor. What kind of background do you have? What kind of education did you get? Are you schooled in the arts? I know that you have a film background, and you've been in a few movies. Can you give us some contextualize that for us?
Well, I grew up in I was born in Brooklyn and then moved to Rockaway Beach. I was in Queens, and my mom and dad were always very supportive of really whatever kind of different passion that I would jump to. You know, like sometimes I said back then, when I was like 12 going on 13, I saw my friend Jamar in a honeycomb cereal commercial with Andre the Giant, and I was like, wow, my friend is on TV and he's with a WWF superstar. I was like, I want to do that. And I asked him, and he said, I have a manager and an agent. And I was like, my mom and dad had nothing. My dad was in the restaurant business. My mom didn't understand what I was doing. I was 12, 13, and I said, you're driving me to the city. I have a meeting with this agent. And I like this kind of like manifestation of earning it, you know, and you can't do it on your own. I had to have my mom drive me in to go there to go to the auditions, and it took so many before I got one. And I said, just hang in there. And I was like, Jamar said it takes a few, and then I got one, and it was for like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure toys. And I had always grown up like in this creative world where, you know, I had always been drawing and, you know, comic books and all of that stuff. But when I went to school, I went to NYU for journalism communications and that route. I didn't go for acting because I had been doing acting in a young age, and I didn't really, my agent was like, don't go to school for acting, learn something else. But I had always wanted to be in the creative arts. And when I came out here, you know, I only took those things to learn about, you know, to get a college education and to learn more about different things that interest me in humanities and the arts.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to become a broadcast journalist or a print journalist. So it wasn't until when I came out here doing acting and like started to, you know, as you grow older, you learn more about, being on your own and being yourself. And I had done a scene from this, from the Pollock movie with Ed Harris that we do mm-hmm. scenes in class, and I built all these paintings for the scene. I built all these Pollocks that just look like, you know, regular Pollocks dripping these paints. And when I did mm-hmm. the scene, I got very, like, it was a big scene where he's arguing with Lee Krasner, and I grabbed all mm-hmm. of my paintings on the way out, and it was a different kind of connection. It was almost like, I made these things. I'm not gonna leave them here with you.
Mm-hmm.
These have meaning to me. And it was really a great, it was a good scene, you know, when you're because acting is lying, you know, you're acting, you're like making believe, you're pretending, you're doing this,
mm-hmm.
you're trying to make believe so it looks real. And I was really, that was like something I was really sharply connected to. It was like, I made these things, and I, you know, it took me some time to make these things, and I have feelings and connection to them, and I'm bringing them with me. And I just started mm-hmm. painting a lot after that scene, and just saying I wanted to show it. So that was like in like 2005, I think, and that was before I was heavily connected to, like, then it just becomes something like a cup of coffee or like just to get through the day. Like, if I don't paint, I'm going to get, I ain't going to be a happy person. So, and it is like an addiction. It is like a vice, but it's not a bad one. And it's a decision that I know till the day I'm not here. It's like, I'm going to have to be making something every day, even if it's a little drawing, that's why I think art is a very soothing and an important thing.
Because
not only gets you through the day, but it's going to leave that mark at the end that people will say, you know, this guy made this. It's like, I always talk about it like it's evidence of life. Like, that's why I like abstractions, because it was like that splash, that line, that thing is just like someone was here. Like, that didn't just happen on its own. They're like, a hand moved that, and a brain and a heart told what line for it to go to at that given moment, whether you're really angry at somebody or really happy or just, you know, just feeling good with a beer in your hand, relaxed, that shows that mm-hmm. that happened that day. And I like that about art.
Yeah. Wow. No, I mean, that's quite a story as a transition. I mean, you really fell into something that you loved, and what a strange transition. And it's not as though you were that far away from it. You were still in the arts. It just was a different discipline.
Expressing through character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is your connection then to street art? When did you put something out on the street? How did you get involved with that?
This became, it's cool because I am a lover of all arts. I never like to say I'm a street artist or I'm a graffiti artist or I'm a sticker artist or I think all artists, you know, that's like a badge you earn, like a choice in your life to say you're an artist is one where you can't really expect the money, and you can't really expect, like, that's, it's got to be done because it has to be done, and that's it. And if you wanted to do something else, you know, you can go, you know, get a job and do something else if that's what it's about. But I guess the first thing where I put a piece of art in the street was writing my name on a dumpster in Santa Monica in 2003. And then I hadn't touched it again until like 2009, where when I was in New York, there were big empty subway signs, just white signs. And I would just like, it's really funny. The first street art or the first type of expression was like, I took like a plastic bag in my hand and sprayed it and took acrylic paint of blue, red, and yellow. And just as I was on walking to work at that time, I was working in the city at the Soho Grand, and I had the morning shift. It was like 6 a.m. I'll just put the paint on this plastic bag and walk by a white billboard and leave this strip of color. And just, I was like, the best part is like, I would go to work and be like, I can't wait to get off. I want to see if it's still there. I got to see if it's still there. You can come back down. And that was really exciting. So that's where, I guess, in 2009, and then I came out to L.A. 2010, and, you know, there was so much in Los Angeles, like, right at, that was, like, I guess, at the precipice of, right at the beginning of art in the streets, and exit through the gift shop, and, I mean, in every corner you would turn, so there would be a different wheat paste and a different stencil and a different, and that was really cool. It was like everyone was getting excited. It was like this patriotism toward art right at that time, and that's a really good time. I was like, you know, I had always thought, you know, I have a story to tell and I want to say it. So why don't I put out little clues? You're not going to drop a whole big script on everyone. So I put out these little stickers that said, you will lose and lose, don't stop, one day you will win, and different little connections. That was just one that stuck, and I started repeating that one. So my first really street, my first type of thing was those strips of color. And in fact, as an actor, if you want to be in, you don't have to audition to do a painting. You just paint it. And at that point, I was like auditioning for so many movies. I was like, forget this. Let me just write my own movie. You know, I want to make something for myself. And I like that kind of, as an artist, you're the director. You're the, you know, you just do it. You don't have to wait around for anyone. You don't have to get funding. You know, you can find anything and make something. And if you have an extra couple of bucks, why not put it in there and put some gold leaf on it just because you feel like it. So,
right. I mean, that's great.
That was my first thing, foray into street art, and then just being so present in Los Angeles and paying attention and going to a lot of different shows, hanging out with artists, talking to artists. And I learned so many things from so many artists that I admired. This great artist, David Schillinglaw, in 2007, my father had passed away, and that was a big moment in my life. And I had said, I never saw Van Gogh's paintings in Amsterdam. I've never been to London. I've never been to Paris. I'm doing it. And like David, it was back in the MySpace days, and I was able to see his artwork in his mind, and I was so amazed. I found another artist like Basquiat who I was just, you know, enamored with and loved. And he's like, come over, you know, if we get along, we'll paint, and we'll put up a little show in the street out there. And if not, you can just go travel if we don't get along. And he was such a great host and opened my eyes to new artists I had never seen before, like Phil Frost and still I like that through the people you meet is one of the best parts about this job. All the other people who are in the same, who have that same, like, kind of like ticking heart, like that heart that's just like, this is good. And it's cool to meet the artists.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the things you're describing are some of the reasons that's so exciting to be living and part of the art world today in the 21st century. And some of the things that I'm attracted to would just, you know, whether street art is a term or it's one avenue or a genre or just one way. I mean, in art history, we always use labels, so you can't get away from them.
Yeah.
There's questioning assumptions. The old rules for making it in the art world don't apply, that you have to fit in within one style, that you have to do it a certain way, that you have to pander to a gallery and just take your portfolio to place. I mean, you're talking about collaboration. You're talking about bypassing a system, but at the same time, using the system, and you're making your own way. And that's what it sounds like you've gone on. You've been able to meander in all these different genres and locations and contexts and make it and do it your own way. And with where we are, just, you know, contextually, like the history of art, and if this is really a postmodern narrative or context that we're in, there is no story of art. We can do any style. We don't have to follow these old ways of, this is how you make it in the art world. You need to follow this formula. And to me, that's really exciting. And to hear your story, it's not like other people's. And that's a really good thing. To me, I feel like that's pretty exciting and encouraging for folks listening.
Yeah, one of my great friends is an artist, Luis Canizaro, school, when I came out to L.A., I fell in love with his stuff, and I got to meet him, and he's one of my great friends. In fact, we did a painting together in my show that's coming up. He's like, how to make it in the art world. You just show the F up. You just show up. And, like, Woody Allen, like, David Chillingwallace is like, you know what? You want to be something? Turn up. He reminded me, just turn up and be there, you know. And there's something to say about, there's something to be said about, you know, hard work. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to be the best artist. I mean, who's giving you the trophy anyway? Who's saying you're a 9.5 and you're an 8.7 and you're a 6? You know, it's not about being the best, you know. I'm never going to be the best. Damn, I'm far from it. But I'm the best for me when I use all the time that I have and make what it is, and when I look at it and say, okay, that can go in the gallery because I want that there. I want people to see what that says. And hard work is something that is really rewarding. It's like gambling, but it's not. It's like even if you work the hardest that you can and the numbers don't turn out the way it's supposed to be, you're going to be handed something and you're going to have something to show for it. Like whether you get punched in the head and you have the scars to prove it and you remember it and you have that experience, it will then be brought to the next painting. So you know what? It was worth it, and you did win, and you did pay for it. And at the end of the day, you know, all these things start to stack up and stack up, and it's like your treasure chest of memories and treasure chest of things that you can always open when it's time to do a painting. I think that Rene Maria Rilke, who wrote Letters to Young Poets, said, like, even if you were locked in a room with nothing, wouldn't you have those experiences from your childhood or anything that's inside of you that you'd be able to paint? You could always write a song.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Yeah, which is, speaking of the consistency, sort of a formula for success that I've heard, that I know to be true. If you want to be more successful than 90% of the people out there, there's things you need to do. It's, one is show up, and then you show up on time, and then you work hard. You know, it's all it is. There's usually...
I set 3 alarms for this interview today. I'm telling you, I don't want to miss it.
Yeah, I mean, that's and most people don't prepare themselves for that kind of work ethic, and it's so simple, but the very best people do that. So, you know, pushing folks forward, they should show up to your opening this weekend. It's going to be fun, and then if folks want to learn more about you or find your work online, where could we point them, Gregory?
You can see some finished work at gallerybrown.com, and the color brown, and gregorysif.com is my website, kind of like my running blog right now. That's just like the lead up and the build up, the journal entries that are going into Matter of Time. And at the top of that page is all the information about the show. Should I say where it's at and the time and all that?
Yeah, go for it.
It's this Saturday night. It's from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Gallery Brown. It's 140 South Orlando Avenue in West Hollywood. And, Gregory Sif, just on all the other things, all the other social, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff.
Great.
And then just if you're in Los Angeles, let's look around.
Yeah, fantastic. And thank you. Well, thank you so much, Gregory. I appreciate the
thank
time.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun. You have a whole lot of enthusiasm, and I'm excited for you. So good luck this weekend.
I appreciate the time that you gave me on here, and I look forward to seeing your book in person.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. We'll have our first of... Go ahead, what were you going to say?
No, a lot. All of us, my friends, 20 and Mar from the Creative Cartel, and we're looking forward to seeing what's in there.
Well, and they've all been very good friends of this, and many of them went through interviews in the process of researching it. So I'm thankful for the community. So thank you, Gregory. I appreciate it. And if folks are interested in learning more about future podcasts or guests, you can visit our Facebook page, which is Stay Up Los Angeles Street Art. But until then, we'll see you next week, and we'll see you online. Thanks so much, Gregory. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just no good anymore since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. One is the loneliest number. One is the loneliest number. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number, much, much, much. Divided by two.